B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub app. Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I promise a couple other items just to mix them in. First, Patriots draft. Get to this quickly. What did you just report there? Anything Patriots related there, Murray, you just had in your update?
Ish, because they've been tied by many draft prognosticators with this Daniel Jones, the big tall quarterback with Duke. And both the ESPN guys, Mel Kiper and the other one there, have him going to them at 32. And now you have NFL Network's Mike Garofolo reporting today that the Washington Redskins have explored trading into the top five because they want Daniel Jones. And then there's other reports.
Trading into the top five?
Yeah, because they want him that bad.
To top five?
Yeah.
Top five.
Yeah,
top five of the first round.
Some of these reports that I've been since reading is that Daniel Snyder, the idiot owner there, has taken over the first round of the draft.
Boy.
Those are the quotes.
No, that's good.
The last time he did this, do you remember?
Al Haig over there.
Do you remember the last time he did this?
Robert Griffin?
RG3?
Yep, RG3. They traded all those picks for him. They got one good season, blew out his knee, and that was it.
He's taken over the first round?
Well, you could argue, though, that RG3 was good until he got hurt.
I'm taking over the first round? What a tool bag this guy is.
Al Davis Jr.
So the Patriots get linked to a player. You know there's no shot now. Right? I mean, there's no...
Yeah, it's Lions season.
It's Lions season, so you're trying to bait some idiot to get trade up, and then another...
And it worked.
And then a better player falls to you, and of course, here comes Daniel Stein. Top five?
Top five.
I mean, that's stupid. It's stupid.
I am all for drafting a quarterback, but...
I mean, that's one of those where you wait and see if he's around there in the mid to late first, and then you want to go get him, you jump him. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly, yes.
You jump in and get him is what I meant. Boy, did that come out wrong. Then, but the idea of, like, into the top five? That's idiotic.
Idiotic.
This other rumor, though, if we want to maybe tie with the Patriots, considering their lack of depth at the position, is that Ian Rappaport is reporting that teams believe that the Eagles wide receiver Nelson Agholor is available for trade. I would be in on him.
Me too.
I like Agholor too.
For sure. Absolutely. I
don't have Bademosi cover him.
I like that idea better than freaking Demaryius Thomas and Josh Gordon. I've seen Nelson Agholor fight and compete and a little bit more my kind of guy. Football player versus just one of these, you know, receivers. So fine. And we're going to toss now for tight ends, receivers, and running backs. They're pretty good at running back. I think they're, when I mean good, their depth chart and their roster is good at that position. Tight end receivers, an absolute disaster area. Where do you think they go? I mean, they desperately need receivers, but don't you think they're more likely to invest high at the tight end position versus the receiver position?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just given their track record where Bill thinks those receivers are all up and down the board, but he's horny for these tight ends in the first round because, I you know, combination of size or speed or whatever. You know, he feels the tight ends have to go high and receivers don't, which is weird. Maybe he's right. I don't know. But as we toss him today, I'm going to pay a lot closer attention to the tight ends than I am the receivers.
Well, that's how I feel. And because again, a tight end is going to serve a dual purpose for you too, right? Worst case, you can get someone who can block and help your run game because you should be able to hit on that part of it. And the other thing is which position ultimately is more likely to get you a mismatch.
Oh, tight end, for sure.
So, I think it's, you know, I think they're going to do something like that.
Okay.
So I told you, or defensive line.
There's a Patriots minute for you now. Your baseball team. Nice team you got there, man.
No, terrific. Yeah, they picked up three games in Tampa, and they gave half of it back in one day. Because Tampa won in Kansas City last night, and the Red Sox blew a doubleheader. So, it's a game and a half right out the window, went right back.
Detroit's tanking, right?
Detroit is basically tanking. They've improved a little bit. I mean, I think they're 12-10 now. So, you know, they're starting to rebuild and infuse some youth into the system. They've gotten a little bit better, but they still shouldn't be a match for the Red Sox. Like, you know, if you had told me even that they split yesterday, fine. Okay, doubleheaders generally are hard to sweep. So, you know, it's a lot of baseball. Like, more often than not, it's going to end up breaking even. You lose them both. And the bigger story for me now is Chris Sale. Like, you got Sale on the mound in the season opener, and Sale's comment after the game yesterday was, well, you know, when I come out of the game, we had a chance to win. So what's he, a number five starter now? Is this the goal? You want a chance to win when your ace is on the mound? That's what we're doing? So the Red Sox are 0-5 when Sale pitches. 0-5. Like, to me, just do the math. He's your entire problem mathematically. If Sale wins his games, you're over 500 or at 500. Last year, they went 22-10 when Sale pitched. Or 2 years ago, they went 22-10. Last year, obviously, he missed time. But the point is, you should win 65-70% of the time when your ace is on the mound. You're 0-5? He's got the worst record in baseball. 0-4. There isn't another 0-4 pitcher in the game. Chris Sale's 0-4, and I know he got a no decision yesterday. But I look at the whole thing, and I say, this is really a Chris Sale problem now. Like, and the series openers that we've talked about where they've had difficulty.
Oh, yeah, here's another one.
All the chance to, you're always with the chance to reset, or if you have won the day before, to build on it. Chris Sale's pitched four of those games. I mean, this is really, it's about Sale. Sale pitched a game at Seattle, they lost 12-4. He pitched the Toronto game at home, they lost 7-5. He pitched at New York, they lost 8-0, and yesterday they lost 7-4. In Sale's games, in a series opener, they've been outscored 34-13. This is your ace. So the Red Sox had better hope that this whole plan of having Sale stronger at the end of the year, they better hope it works, because he is killing them right now.
Are you still sure he's okay physically? I mean, is that still what you believe?
I feel pretty good about physically, yes. I mean, again, he's thrown 94. The start before, he hit 97, 98. Even if it was on a couple of pitches, it's there when he needs it.
But they're starting to, I think you mentioned this to me yesterday off the air, I don't want to steal your take, but they're starting to do what losing teams do, which is, if it's not the starting pitching, then their bullpen gives it up.
So this is what's going on now.
Or I think this happened a lot in the nightcap. They had all these opportunities to score in the first three innings, and not that I was watching it, but just, you know, reviewing it. They left guys on like first, second, third inning, big opportunities to score, left them stranded all those three innings. So it's like, if you get the pitching, you don't drive them in with two outs. If you get the starting pitching, the relievers gag it. The relievers are good, but your starters can't get out. And sort of like, it feels like they're running into that thing.
Yeah, there's always something going wrong earlier in the year, right? You know, they were scoring a few runs, but they were giving up 10 a game. Then they go to Oakland. Sale pitches, gives up one home run. They lose 1-0. Now they come home. They get a lead early. The other team ties it up, but Sale can't stay in the game. The bullpen comes in. Now the bullpen's crapping its pants. So, like, you know, there's always something going wrong to undermine them. But I'm telling you, looking at the aggregate now, if you take the whole thing, and they're, what are they now? They're 9-14, I think it is, 23 games or something like that. You take that whole body of work, oh, it's all on Sale. I put the large majority of it on Sale now. If Chris Sale's doing his job, they're 500 or close to it, and we're not panicking. We don't love the way they're playing, but we sit there and go, it's all right. You know, they'll figure it out. They'll straighten it out. But 9-14 and your ace is 0-5, or you're 0-5 when your ace takes the mound, Sale's a problem right now. They better hope this works.
And it's bugging you that he's sort of acting like he gave him a chance to win yesterday?
Well, that comment of, you know, when I came out of the game, we had a chance to win, so that's better. So that's what we're doing now. We're treating him like Steven Wright. Get five innings out of the starting pitcher. That's okay. And I was surprised to hear that come out of his mouth. Because now, in the same breath, he did say, to his credit, look, I've got to go deeper in the game. I'm putting too much on the bullpen. But we had a chance to win the game. I'm not paying you to give me a chance. I'm paying you to win. That's what I'm paying you to do. I am paying you to win. And right now, in five games, when you take the ball, 0-5. The team's five games are under 500. Where's the discrepancy? It's with him. It's 100% with him. If he's 4-1, they're in totally a different spot.
Okay, there's a Patriots minute for you. There's a Red Sox minute. I think you probably found that particularly enjoyable if you're a Red Sox fan or a fan of Chris Sale. We're going to toss some markers later on this segment. We'll get back to your calls right after these words.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Green's 2-1 to Lynn. And a bounding ball is the second baseman, Harrison, and that'll do it. The Tigers sweep the Red Sox in the doubleheader today. 7-4 and 4-2. And there go all those great feelings after the three-game sweep against Tampa Bay.
Back to your phones as promised. Tony and Holbrook was waiting patiently for a Red Sox take. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Quick question on the Bruins. What do you think causes them to play so good on the road, and then when they get home, they just struggle to even score?
Okay. Your comment line said Red Sox. Oh, maybe it said home road record. So it was Bruins home road record. I don't know. I think you see it a lot. Toronto was a better road team than home team as well.
Yeah. Toronto was a better road team all year, right?
You see it a ton. I think there's something about hockey where when you're on the road and you don't have to please your paying customers, and again, in the playoffs, it shouldn't matter, but I think it creeps in a little bit that, well, you go on the road and go 0-0 in the first period, you feel pretty good about yourself. That's a road period, right? If you're at home and it's 0-0 after the first, your fans are sort of grumbling. I think that's sort of, it's easier on the road to go out and just grind it out and do the simple little things, and that's usually the right thing to do. And I think that's why, to me, that's it. That's what it is.
I mean, the game maybe simplifies a little too, right? Like, I don't know. You know, you worry less, maybe the coaches worry less about matching up lines and all that other stuff, and you just go out and do your job.
So, look, I think the home ice helped him last night. Again, the crowd was terrific, and we've seen Toronto in that spot before. But I'm telling you, if Rask didn't stop Matthews on that slot, you know, the slot shot right there about 3-4 minutes into the game, that first really good opportunity for Austin Matthews, that building would have gone silent, and it would have, you know, the tension turns up and it becomes, you don't want to be home in that spot. And I've seen that happen to the Bruins a lot over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I think some of that happened to Toronto in game six. Like, the Bruins got ahead and all of a sudden it was the Leafs started, and the building got quiet and the Leafs got tight.
Mark and Medford, go.
Yeah, Mike, with the series starting right up again tomorrow night, the second round going against Columbus, I think this benefits the Bruins in every way possible, especially Tuukka Rask. And the way he's played the last two games, we might see another Tuukka run like we saw during that, 18-game regulation?
You mean a mid-season Tuukka run, which usually comes in December, January, February, and not in April. But is there a Tuukka run coming in April finally? Maybe. We shall see.
Yeah, the difference during the regular season is he doesn't play every game.
And that's true, too. And there's layoffs and long gaps now. That's pretty much every other night. In terms of the layoff, I think game one absolutely benefits the Bruins.
Yeah, no question.
It happened last year with the Lightning. The Lightning were sitting there waiting for you. You play seven games, knockdown, dragout against Toronto, the same Toronto team. And the next thing you know, game one, you take them. And I think, and then from there, Tampa woke up and smushed you. But I think game one, the advantage is absolutely with the Bruins.
So I heard a stat like this the other night when I was driving home late. I want to say it was like Pharrell on the bench or something, that they had a stat of teams that had long layoffs and played game one since 2000, and they're like 2-9 something like that.
It's a tough spot.
Yeah, a lot of those teams really struggle coming out of the gate.
Too much time off and you lose, Mafia.
Take advantage of it then. Jason and Needham on Sharks Knights. Go ahead, Jason.
So I coach at the Division I college hockey level, and at that level, at our level, you can challenge a five-minute major. Even if the refs miss it, we can go back and challenge it, and they can call a five-minute major. So I think last night, if the NHL had that in place, they could have challenged that, and the refs could have realized that it actually wasn't a five-minute major, and it could have helped them. But all said, you can't allow four power play goals.
You can't allow four power play goals. Thank you for saying that. That's the bottom line. And the coach is complicit, too, because he never calls a timeout in the middle of that.
I mean, talk about imploding.
But the I don't know if replay helps that. I don't know if they get that right. I don't know. It's still a judgment call. He still got hurt. And he still went down pretty hard. I don't think it's a five-minute major. Most people would say that's not a five-minute major. But on a judgment call like that, is replay going to reverse it, first of all? But even if they will, I don't know. You want games to come? You want them to start reviewing judgment calls on major versus minor penalties?
So it's a fair point.
Come on.
All I'm telling you is I don't think that thing last night was a major.
There's no way it was a major, or no way it should have been. Mike and Methuen on the Bees. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I just want to say I feel a little bit vindicated. I called you guys last Thursday after the game four. You were talking about how like the Bruins couldn't survive if they went if they played at that pace when they won that 6-4 game, and I told you, I said the Bruins when the Maple Leafs played that offensive game, it opens up chances for the Bruins, and I think it helped the Bruins over the course of the last two games. I was more worried about the 2-1 games, the 3-2 games, where Toronto sort of commits into that defense, and they actually sort of bite and even shut the game down a little bit speed-wise for themselves.
So, Michael,
so
let me tell you that playing Toronto style, I think you got away with it last night because you're goalie, and theirs, puked on himself a little bit. And so I think that was the difference last night. Game six up in Toronto was really more to your pace. It really was. Once you got those first two power play goals, the balance of that game was played on your level, not theirs. So you're kind of half right. I think the Bruins, if I'm the Bruins, I'm saying I'm glad to be done with that Toronto team. They gave them fits. I think Toronto gave them fits. Either a bad matchup or, hopefully it's just a bad matchup. And I think it is. I think Toronto's good. I think Toronto's good.
I mean, they can fly.
And I think they match up, I just think they match up well with you. I think your big, sturdy defensemen, Chara and Carlo, primarily, are better suited to playing a team like you're going to see in Columbus with big guys they can lean on. Toronto's little scat backs scooting around all over the place. Ooh, I thought the balance of that series, I was holding my breath for the balance of that series. I'm glad to be rid of the Leafs.
Yeah, I think they're a brutal matchup for anybody. And I think under the circumstances, Carlo later in the series played his best hockey of the series. So I thought Carlo was better as they went along. In theory, Columbus should be a little more to their style.
We've got Joe and Lowell. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I think Toronto outplayed the Bees probably 75% of the series. On top of that, I think Anderson was probably, he was tested a lot more than Rask was, I feel, during the series. And on top of that, I still feel like the Bruins gave up a lot of scoring chances. And let me ask you this too, Mike, real quick. What was Rask doing on his stomach in the corner two games ago? I don't know what he was doing. And why did he knock, the post, the goalie off the goal?
Okay, so just you don't give me 18 things. He knocked the net off its moorings last night, and they had a defensive zone faceoff because of it when they had cleared the puck. Sort of frustrated me at the time. It did. And in game six, he crashed into one of his own players, went spilling into the corner, and it took him forever to get back into the net.
I meant to talk about this. That drove me bananas. What the hell was that?
Why are we still bitching about Rask today? I mean, you want to... I don't know. Today's just not the day to bitch about Rask. He helped win you a game seven. It was the biggest reason why you won a game seven. Well, I mean, I love Bruins fans for doing that. I mean, that's great. Keep it negative. Thank you. Stay in character. But it's a little silly. I mean, I talk about the save he made on Matthews. I talk about the two saves he made on Marner in the first period. Kept you in that thing. The blocker save he made on, was it
Hyman
or Nylander there in the third period? I mean, there were a handful there where you were on the verge of getting porked in that game, and he saved your ass.
He was. He was great. I mean, he was great last night. And I'm all for bitching. I'm not joking.
Kevin and Swampscott, your thoughts.
Hey, you guys. So I know we're not for pleasantries, but I've been in Texas the past couple months, and sports talk radio down here is just miserable. We take you guys for granted. But when it comes to the Bruins themselves, I made the mistake of tweeting to Hurley last night that they weren't playing that well, and I was just bombarded with the winner always plays the best. And if that second line keeps playing how they're playing, we're going to have a really tough time. I mean, Pasternak didn't touch the puck once without turning it over last night.
Brutal.
David Krejci in game sevens, 10 games, he has 9 assists. Good job. 0 goals. What happens to this guy?
Well, I don't pay him to score. I'd like him to score more, but if you're telling me he's a point-a-game guy in game sevens, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I don't care about the goals with Krejci. To me, it's about the productivity of the line. He's a setup man.
I think Krejci's been fine.
Yeah, he's a playmaker. He's a guy that sets people up. That's what he does. That's his strength.
Krejci was good in the series. He was fine last night. I think the problem on that line was Pasternak. Like, weirdly, bizarrely, brutal. I mean, the caller was right. Every time he touched the puck, it was turned over. Just about every time.
I want to see where they start now in the Columbus series, what they do. Do they go back to Pasternak with that first group? Like, what do they do? Because to me, there's decisions to be totally different set of matchups, right?
Wally, you got a Red Sox thought?
Hello, Tony?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Wally and Forever, you look at the Red Sox, you look at Dombrowski, John Henry, what they're thinking about, you know, the whole situation right now. I mean, Cora can't read the Riot Act. I mean, these guys aren't exactly working in the coal mines or in the salt mines or punching the clock making $15 an hour. They gave these guys a lot of money. But as far as the season, I mean, it's just been dismal. You wonder what's going to happen next. Like I said, they just can't seem to get everything together.
Do they need to go in there and read them the Riot Act?
No. I think enough of that's been done. I think the message has been delivered. Guys, we need to play better. I'm telling you, at this stage, I'm going to Chris Sale. This is your guy. This is the guy you invested in. And I would also include, you know, Cora and Lavangi from the standpoint of the plan they made with Sale. 0-5 is what you were planning? That's what you guys were planning, 0-5 to start the year? Because, again, just 3-2 would make a difference here. 3-2 would make them 12-13, if my math is right. Something like that, right? It's always dangerous. But you're right. You know, the point is you're right there. You're right there. If you could just play a little above 500 when he pitches.
I just don't like you putting it all on Sale. Not that I care about him being criticized. I'm fine with that. But then that's ignoring the bad offensive starts by some of the guys. Then you're sort of ignoring some of the other shoddy starting pitching. You're sort of ignoring the wheel of gutless bums out there in the bullpen. I don't want you to just reduce it to one guy. There's problems across the team.
Agreed. And I'm just telling you that if your money man were delivering, a lot of those problems would be mitigated.
All right.
This is why you pay your best players.
Let's chuck some markers, shall we?
Yep.
Have we gotten everything? Were there any complaints for the spatter from day one? Because everyone usually gets mad at us for chucking markers in here.
Oh, no, I don't think anybody. I didn't hear anything.
I didn't hear any bitching, surprisingly enough. Right.
I think
we're good.
Okay. There's some marks down there left of the garden, I can tell you that much. But here, I think we're pretty good. We tarp it up pretty good. We cover everything. And well, anyway, Felger Maz Big Board returns coming up next. Tight end position in the crosshairs.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, it's that time. The Felger and Maz Big Board is brought to you by the Peterson School. The best in the trades are drafted from the Peterson School. Go to petersonschool.com. For more information, I've put in and cut and pasted with tape and scissors.
I love it.
Our selection so far. Okay, these guys are on their lav mics. Are they up? Can we hear them?
Hello.
Hello, Maz?
Can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think I can, yeah. Are we sounding good?
You.
Okay. So, if you're watching on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, like I said, this is really a ghetto kind of board. It's not exactly what you'll see on ESPN, but it's not so bad. So, I'll just give a quick synopsis of what we've got so far. We've got offensive tackles. They unfortunately hit Jonah Williams, who's going to go in the top 10. That's not a consideration. It was just a bad toss by Murray or Maz, one of them. I'd say our top tackle prospect is Trey Pipkins out of Sioux Falls. I don't love our chances on that one. Our top center prospect is Sam Mustafer from Notre Dame. If they go center, guard to look out for, Bo Benschwazel out of Wisconsin. That's a guy I keep saying, keep an eye out for. At defensive tackle, a big need. Top player on the Felger Maz Big Board is Ed Oliver. He's considered a first to second round pick prospect out of Houston. The problem with him is he's got arms about the size of an alligator, correct?
Yep, short arms, T-Rex.
Got tiny little arms, as you can see the picture up here. I don't know what his chances are.
He could go top 10. There's no shot for him.
Is that right? A guy with such small arms is going to go in the top 10? At the edge positions. And by the way, the Felger Maz Big Board is hit 6 out of 7 years. So pay attention to this. One of these names is going. On the edge, a lot of good edge players this year. We've got Montez Sweat.
Yeah, and he stinks.
Oshemi Exemis. Did we figure out how to pronounce that yet?
Oh, the Greek guy.
Yeah, the Greek guy. I'm not sure he's Greek, but that's a Greek name.
Zamanis.
Okay, so keep your eye on that. We've got safety prospects from yesterday. Deontay Thompson from Alabama, first guy on the board according to the Pro Football Weekly draft guide. So that's a high prospect there. I think safety's a need. I think there's a chance that you'll see a safety. Deontay Thompson, keep an eye on him. Also keep an eye on Nasser Adderley, from Delaware. Okay, that's another safety to keep a prospect on, or to keep an eye on. Joe Juwan Williams out of Vanderbilt, our top corner.
Someone
informed me that Burt Breer of the MMQB has the Patriots selecting him.
Joe Juwan Williams?
Yes.
Okay, it's spelled J-O-E-G-J-U-A-N, Joe Juwan.
Joe Juwan.
J-U-A-N is Juan, like Juan Uribe or Juan Gonzalez.
Joe Juan. So Joe Juan Williams is our top player on the board.
Could be Joe Juwan.
And then down here at linebacker, watch out for Mac Wilson from Alabama, Trey Lamar from Clemson as well, our linebacker prospects. All right, let's go tight end, shall we?
I'm in.
Okay, big position of need. You know they're going to draft one, maybe two, so these ones are really going to count. These are important tosses,
I'm
fellas,
aware of
okay?
That. I'm aware that they are important.
So, again, Maz is standing with a Peterson School football in his hand. He has inserted a marker into the nose of the football.
Pink highlighter.
That's what he'll be throwing. Murray is throwing something from an illegal wrist rocket that he has embargoed in from New Hampshire.
It's a slingshot.
Okay, we've tarped the studio. Our Town for Tire studios are protected. We are now be tossing the marker. Maz, hold on 1 second.
Oh, jeez.
Go ahead, fine, go.
Okay, 3-step drop.
Oh, nice toss, Maz.
Thanks.
Loud, that's for sure. Okay, that hit Caden Smith out of Stanford.
Ooh!
Caden
wicked
Smith
smart.
Out of
he'll
Stanford.
Still likes the smart players.
Okay, he goes 6'5", 255. That is nice size right there. 6'5".
Great radius.
255. He's projected, according to this draft magazine, somewhere between the first and second round.
Oh, perfect.
His strong points, he plays in a pro-style offense, very good tight end size, very good athlete with speed, change of direction and body control, very good blocker. Whether in space or at the line of scrimmage, he's sure-handed with a large receiving radius. I like the sound of this guy.
There you go, absolutely.
Caden Smith, weak points. Not many, they say.
Oh!
What?
You never hear that.
What? Weak points, not many, but Smith must add a little bulk to play the Y.
Well, that's all right.
And how fast will he run? So this is actually put out before the 40 times.
Damn.
The way we see it on Caden Smith, either Smith or Iowa's TJ Hockenson or Noah Fant will be the first tight end off the board. Smith is this guy, the guy we took. Caden Smith is the more prototypical NFL tight end who can play the Y, even though he has to bulk up to do it.
A good toss.
That was a good toss, Maz.
Thank you.
I like the sound of that guy.
Bulk him up with some chowder and clams.
We can just adjust his medication.
Okay, so now we're gonna chuck two at the second and third pages. So these are later round prospects, but you know how the Patriots operate. Stand by.
All right.
Go ahead, Murray. This thing, Murray's wrist rocket, if you haven't seen this, is freaking lethal.
Oh, a dud!
Yeah, what happened?
It backfired?
Yeah, it went all over me.
Hold on.
Misfire! I don't know how that happened.
Okay, watch out! Oh!
Here we go.
It hit that guy in the picture, like right in the belly. Maybe a little lower.
Oh, man. What a mess. Okay, this is Dax Raymond. Dax Raymond from Utah State, 6'4 and 5'8, 249. Strong points, productive. Size, tall with big hands.
Ooh, I like that.
Big hands, Maz. 10 3/8 inches.
You know what that means.
Plays a physical game. Good blocker, both in line and in space. Another good-sounding prospect here.
Big gloves.
Weak points. Overaged?
Overaged.
What's it, lazy?
Okay, yeah, overaged. I've never heard that term.
Was he 31?
He's overaged.
Yeah. Okay. Seventh year senior.
No, I'm feeling overaged by the day.
Yeah, he's older than Gronk.
Weak points. Overaged will be a 24-year-old rookie who is already 6 years. Oh, he's a Mormon who had to do one of those missions. Yeah, one of those missions. So that I kind of think that's a good thing. I don't know.
He's mature.
Yeah, we'll be a 24-year-old rookie who is already 6 years out of high school after spending 2 years on a Mormon mission.
Well, how'd you like that switch? Going from Gronk to a Mormon.
Must add a little more size and strength. He's a one-speed guy, which is average. So his speed's average. So they got a slow Mormon on the board. Put him on there.
And old.
Okay, yeah,
slow old Mormon.
Yeah. I don't know.
You couldn't get any different than Gronk.
Those guys can play. All right, Maz, go ahead. Final toss of the big board.
Blue marker this time. Blue.
Oh, another nice shot.
God.
Did you hit the same guy?
Violent.
No, I hit just to the right of the guy in the blue. That was a dart.
Okay. We've got Zach Gentry out of Michigan.
Ooh.
Zach Gentry out of Michigan. He is 6'7".
See, I go for the big guys.
6'7", 245. Holy crap.
He's a big fella.
It's Alvin's son.
Strong points. Tall and long. Large receiving radius,
competitive receiver in traffic, good speed and burst for a tall guy. All right. Weak points, narrow frame, and won't get much bigger. How do they know that? Well, I mean, you want bigger than 6'7"? Who says he can't put on bulk?
Well, wait till they shoot him up like a piece of cattle.
Exactly. Look, a Thanksgiving Day turkey by the time they're done with him. Narrow frame and won't get much bigger, they say. Must increase his strength, especially in the lower body. Struggled against Ohio State. Willingness as a blocker, but not strong enough to be consistently effective. Only played the position a couple of years.
We can fix that.
He's projected to go in the 5th and 6th round. So, very important position. You know they're taking him, folks. You know the proficiency of the Felger and Maz big board. Zach Gentry from Michigan. Dax Raymond from Utah State. And Caden Smith from Stanford University. Pay attention to those names at the tight end position. Given our track record, one of those is going off the board for the Patriots. We will do receivers and running backs at the end of the 5 o'clock hour.
That's so a big one.
In an hour, we'll get back to the big board, but back to your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Now centered, fired, Rask, a stop on Matthews, point blank. Marner shoots, Rask the save, rebound, Rask able to stop the return from Mitch Marner, who's denied. And it's over the line right side, walks in, shoots, Rask the save, they go blocker again. Centered out in front, Ennis taking a couple of whacks at it. He couldn't put a fork on it.
Marner over the line near side. Goes rink wide. Centered out in front. Hyman to the step on Rask. He drove it at the near post. Rask slid across, made the save.
I don't think you win any game 7 unless you're, you know, rarely. Last year we had a 7-4 where it just seemed like it was all offense, but generally speaking, you need your goaltender to hold you in there. And I thought Tuukka was outstanding. Had a real good series. Tuukka was great tonight. Really handled himself well. Great composure. Could outplay the puck when he needed to. Froze it when he needed to. We limited his workload this year. And you wonder how is it going to affect you in the playoffs. And I think tonight, hopefully, you got some residual effect of that where he was fresh the last couple games playing every second night. It pays off and hopefully even more going forward. But I think he was our best player tonight.
Bruce Cassidy on the number one star of the game last night, Tuukka Rask. Won you that game. I don't know if he stole you that game. He stole you a period in there. Maybe two. He steal you the game. It's a little strong. But
the second period for sure.
He was your best player. He stole you a period. And he did exactly what he needs to do more of. And that is keep you in it when you're not in it.
I was just going to say, pick them up when they need to be picked up.
That's the whole idea. You know, when you play well, when the team plays well, that's the whole, why you don't pay $7 million for that. You pay $7 million to be the guy to keep you in it when you're getting outplayed, which absolutely happened last night. 100% helped win to the series. And, you know, I asked you yesterday, who is the series MVP through 6 games? I think we all agreed Frederik Andersen. Now let me ask you, through 7 games, who's the series MVP?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
To me, it's either Rask or Marchand.
Yeah.
Because Rask has been good. He's been good all series. Last night, he, you know, won you the game, which elevates it. But I don't know if he was, you know, I don't know. Marchand had 9 points in the 7 games, which was by far the leading scorer in the whole series.
Got to put a lot of weight on game 7, though.
You do, and Marchand was kind of silent in game 7.
I mean, you got to put a lot of weight on 7, and the reality is they were down 3-2, and Rask played well in game 6 also.
So in the insufferable, incessant bleh culture of Boston, of what's happened to this town between Twitter, the Patriots, the fact that millennials are just vaggy, everything becomes bleh, bleh, everything. So it's
the yin and yang of it. It's the cause and the effect. If we're going to be here, sitting here and, you know, being perceived as negative day in, day out, of course, blah culture is going to exist.
Well, besides, I'm just talking about here. I'm talking about everywhere. It's like, how do you like them now? It's just how it works. And Murray, I love how you've got marker stains on your face.
Do I really?
From that
under backfire. Your left eye.
Yeah, you got a little.
Yeah, consider it war paint.
It's either that or you're getting the measles.
Oh no!
Yeah, you see, you got it right underneath the left eye there, Murray.
Yeah, well.
Okay. So anyway, the storyline becomes Rask silences his haters. You know, and it was an exchange with Cassidy and I think it was Tara Sullivan from The Globe last night about it.
Bruce, you mentioned the second period in particular, and you talked about Tuukka. How much in the second period did you feel like he kept you in the game, or if that's overstating things?
No, that's not overstating. I think that's accurate.
And then just overall, have you ever sort of figured out kind of the real love-hate relationships it seems fans have for him? And do you think after a game like tonight...
Well, he's hopefully converted a few. I think in sports, you have that a lot. I'm a sports fan, other sports, and you know, I have it with certain players on teams I root for. And for me, the time I've known him, he's been a very competitive man, excellent goaltender. We saw it tonight, and hopefully he can start or continue to build on his playoff legacy. It's a big Game 7 win. And like I said, I believe he was our best player. And in the second period, we broke down. We had a tough time moving the puck out of our zone. He was there for us. Now, we end up scoring some goals for him, right? So that's how our team's done it all year. We play for one another. We tend to pick each other up. So he picked us up in the second when we were down. We got him a couple goals in the first so he could relax probably a little bit. But he made the stops he needed to and more. So, like I said, I hope the fans recognize what he did tonight. I think you have to, as a fan, acknowledge when a player plays well. I know in this town, when you don't, you hear about it. That's fine, too. But tonight he played well, and hopefully the people get behind him and acknowledge that.
Okay, it's an interesting exchange. I just think it misses the mark. How does the team feel about him? Bruce, how do you feel about him? Because, you know, we have reams of sound. We got files and files of sound of Cassidy sounding less than fully confident in Rask and more than willing to play the other guy. And... Cassidy routinely calling him out for a soft goal here, could have used a save there. And from what you understand, being a little antsiness in the organization about Rask. So let's ask those questions. How is it relevant that a guy has played four game sevens prior to last night and sucked in pretty much all four of them? He was 2-2. His record was 2-2, but he didn't play well in a single one of them. His goals against was it 3.8 or something? I can't remember what the numbers were.
I want to say like it was 3.74 if I remember right.
Going into the game, it was in the high threes, goals against, and a save percentage of .845, which was just bad.
Horrid.
He played bad in all four game sevens. Is the story that he shut fans up? And what are fans supposed to think about a guy who was, for all intents and purposes, 0-4 in game sevens?
Yeah, so I always think...
So the story is Rask... proving something to himself or answering himself or the organization's feelings about Rask's or Cassidy's feelings about Rask. That's the story. That the fans' uneasiness with Rask was not made up out of nothing. It was made up. It came from not delivering in a lot of these key spots. And it was totally fair, and it is totally fair.
So you know how that goes, though. Now, how many times have you heard a media person ask a question and put it on the fans when it's really about?
Yes, that's right.
This is what we think, and this is what you think.
So much easier to say. Some people think
exactly
versus saying, "Well, I think," or "Your teammate thinks,"
correct,
or "Your owner thinks." You're right. That's an easier. It's a Weasley way to do it. I've done it a million times.
Me
myself.
Too.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I tried to take out a patent on it. They told me that it was already in existence before I got there. And so, I'll tell you what, as you were speaking, what did stand out to me in retrospect, the way they greeted him after the game. That felt genuine, right? Like that felt heartfelt. And I want to say maybe it was Johansson, right? Is he a Finn? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he's a, whatever. But
sweet.
So when he went up to Rask, that felt heartfelt to me. Like it looked like, hey, you bailed us out, good job. You know, like that felt heartfelt. And at the end of the day, like, you know, it's good for him. It's not good for, I know you're touching on this part of it. He's doing it for him, ultimately.
It's about him. It's about him bettering his past performances. I mean, just like David Price. David Price shuts us up. David Price holds a trump card. Why is that about us, a fan or a media person, versus the fact he was 0-9? Isn't that the story? isn't the story that he was 0-for-9 or whatever it was in the playoffs and then won one and then won a championship. And so he broke through against himself. He didn't shut anybody up. He did, but that's not the story. But it's turned into that because this is all now one big vag fest on Twitter and the way people and you folks have become here in Boston through all the winning.
Well, because you're not allowed to be critical of anyone anymore. But he's trying out there, Felger.
I think Rask has been good all series. I think Rask was good all series. There was only one time I got antsy with him the entire seven games, and that was the Austin Matthews goal that went off the crest because he had a bad angle and sort of got small. That's the only time I wanted Halak limbering up, not going in, but just starting to stretch out.
What about the one that Moore scored at the post? It was early.
I didn't like it, but it was game one. Was that game one?
I think it was.
And I didn't love Rask in game one, but he won the problem. The team sucked that night. And that's sort of what I think the balance of Rask's career has been. When they've been bad, he's been bad. When they've been good, he's been good. Which is sort of, again, why $7 million for that? What you pay $7 million for is the guy to do what he did last night. They're getting beat up and down the ice, and he keeps you in it. Now we're talking. Now we're talking. And if that's what you can expect going forward, you got to look at this team differently. Did he have a breakthrough last night? And Cassidy sort of alluded to it, you know, continue to build his playoff legacy. I think he kind of needed a night like that in a game like that. I do.
Yeah, now he just has to do it three more times.
And so long way to go. And as grueling as that series was, and as, boy, am I glad to be rid of the Leafs, because I think they're good, and I think they gave you fits in this series. But that's only, now you've got three more of those, folks. Three more of those. That felt like it took a lifetime.
It really did. No, it could, because relative to some of the other series, it did.
And took a chunk out of you, just suffering through that thing. That's, now you got three more of those to go. And so does Rask. And so does Rask. So there's a little bit of your Bruins reset. We get right back to your calls. I promise all you in the final hour, don't go anywhere. No commercials here, just enough.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.